we can't finish the programme today without talking about the loss, the really sad loss of our former colleague, David Davenport. The news of David's passing, far too soon at the age of 72, came through late yesterday afternoon. He was one of the first presenters of Morning Ireland. That's 40 years ago now. And for those of us who had the pleasure of working with him, it's really very hard to describe how many facets there were to a man who was as kind as he was clever. But we're going to try. And David McCullough is with me now. And I'm really conscious, David, that DDP would be the first to slag any hyperbole. He really didn't like it at all. But he was so kind. He was so smart. He was as sharp as a tack.
He was extremely intelligent, which, as we know, and thankfully isn't a requirement for a career in journalism or broadcasting. But DDP had, he was very widely read and he was very well read. He had what I think the phrase is a well-stocked mind. And he was able to deploy that knowledge and that range of learning. Harry McGee of the Irish Times was tweeting yesterday about one occasion where he was looking for he was writing an article and about something, and DDP came up with a quote from Roman history on the failed Roman Emperor Galba, would have been considered a great leader had he never led. And I think I can imagine who Harry was probably trying to write about. But he just, you know, at the drop of a hat, he was able to pluck that quote, the absolutely perfect quote, and he was brilliant. He had a brilliant turn of phrase. He was incredibly witty. He had a great fondness during his lives on the 6 or the 9 o'clock news for saying, "Oh, the wags in Leinster House are saying X about whatever was going on at the time." And 9 times out of 10, and probably more, the wag in question was one D. Davenport, because he was able to come up with the funny line that summed up a crisis. And of course, that was on air, where he was. I suppose deadpan, professional and all the rest of it. Off air, he was just hilarious. He was a fantastic raconteur. And I think I'll remember him as a great communicator. And whether that was explaining the twists and turns of the negotiations for the Good Friday Agreement, or explaining what was going on in Leinster House, or spinning a yarn over a pint, he was brilliant at drawing on whatever information he had and explaining things in a way that was A, extremely illuminating, and B, often riotously funny.
You first met him in the Evening Press before he went on to work with him.
Yes, he had a brief but glorious career in Burkey. He had left RTE to become head of news in Century Radio, which ended in tears for all concerned. And again, he had hilarious stories about that.
I think he gave Carol Coleman her first job.
She was just saying that to me outside, yeah. And she spoke very highly about the way, and as did many people he gave their first job to in Century, because obviously it was a big startup, gave a lot of journalists their start. But anyway, that had ended in tears, and he applied and got the job as political reporter of the Evening Press, very deservedly. And he was with us, I think, for 3 weeks, two of which he took as holidays. And then he handed in his notice because he had got the job as Northern Editor of RTE, and obviously he was going to take that, much to the loudly expressed annoyance of the newspaper's editor at the time. But he was then forever after known in Burkey as David Gone in an Hour.
And luckily for RTE, he was gone to RTE, where, of course, he would work as Northern editor and cover the run-up to the Good Friday Agreement. And here's a clip of David, of DDP, his news report on the April the 10th, 1998, from Stormont Buildings. And that was the day that hope and history rhymed. That was the day the Good Friday Agreement was signed.
The two prime ministers emerged just before six this evening to inaugurate the historic agreement they hope will usher in a new era for the island. There was praise for the Taoiseach and for the parties from Tony Blair, who paid tribute to all who had lost their lives in the conflict, suggesting that the nature of today's deal would change relationships in Northern Ireland forever.
David Davenport on April the 10th, 1998. And Bertie Ahern, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Anya.
It's a day carved in your memory, and David, so much a part of all of that time.
Yeah, and can I give my sympathies to Derval and all the family, all his children, the extended family. David is a neighbour of mine here in Dunfermline. He's had connections here since the house he lived in since the early 30s, so he's well known in this area, always around the area, so our sympathies to the family today. But, you know, David, I think, is David McCullough just said there, he was such a professional guy, a knowledgeable guy. you know, he was very precise in his questions. He didn't go around the houses. They were fairly, fairly straightforward. And I know he was a very fair journalist, but listen to that clip on you. I remember him giving out hell about being out in that castle building. It was bad enough inside, but he was out in that car park for a week, and it was cold weather, and he didn't appreciate it one bit. And whenever we went out to him, he left us know it as well. But no, he was a wonderful.
Do you know what, Bertie? Just on that, because yeah, it was freezing out in that car park, and that night, and the loos were overflowing. The coffee had run out. It was dreadful. And David knew we would be going on air with Morning Ireland, so during that night, I think about 3 o'clock in the morning, he took me aside, he put me in his car, he turned the heater on, and he got me to warm up. It's just, and you didn't argue because it was David Davenport, and that was just the mark of the man. But it was very cold. I remember that.
Oh, was it? But that whole period on it in the Northern Editor, like he was there for the multi-party talks 91-92. Then there was the Down the Street Declaration 93, the ceasefires 94, then the talks from 95 up to the Good Friday Agreement. And then he was there, you know, for the period afterwards when we were working away on the reform of the policing. So it was like every evening he was on the news, because it was always always one of the top three items. And he was through all of that. And of course he had a huge knowledge of it all, because, you know, he spoke to everybody and anybody, and you know, he probably had a knowledge that nobody else had on it. And the international journalists, I know, used to turn to him a lot, because mm-hmm. he was on the ground permanently.
Talk to me, Bertie, about that Fianna Fáil or the Eish in 2008.
Yeah, that one, I think you changed your rules over there after that. I don't know how that actually happened, but he had half of the party in the shot with him, but it was amazing how he was able to keep a straight face and give a report with all of those.
With people literally falling out of the TV screen. You remember that, David, do you?
I do, the zombie donut. And basically, like, people look at that and they think he was standing on the floor and was surrounded by people. He wasn't. He was on a riser, a small stage, himself and the camera person. And all these party colleagues of Bertie's there got up on chairs so that they could be behind him, and they surrounded him, and one of them actually fell off the chair at one stage and then climbed back on again. And it was the most incredible thing. And as Bertie says rightly, DDP just kept going. Now that thing after the leader speech at the Ard Eish is pretty nerve-wracking. He used to call it the wall of death, because you were relying on other people to cut the right clips and play them in the right order. So it was nerve-wracking enough as it was without these lads, but he loved the clip, because the clip went on YouTube. I don't think we referred to things going viral in those days, but he kept showing me. He said, look how many views it has now. He loved it. He was really proud of that.
And he also loved, didn't he, the letter of complaint about the so-called wig.
Yeah, one of the great benefits of being on the telly is that complete strangers form strong opinions about aspects of your appearance and feel moved to tell you about them. So somebody sent DDP a letter saying, come on off it, own up, it's a wig, we all know it, just admit that you're bald. Which he wasn't, but he was so taken with this letter that he had it framed and put in the downstairs loo. But certainly any of his colleagues from RTE, anywhere they went in Ireland when David was on the telly, the question always was, is it a wig? And it was not.
And Bertie, you're right in mentioning Dervla and his family. He loved his family so much.
Yeah, and you know, I think that was his famous Christmas party when they were all together, and he would bring all his colleagues together, you know, from all walks of life, and the house would be overrun. But I think the family loved that event, and so did we as neighbours. And, you know, he was so kind. I suppose it's hard. I was with him yesterday evening, shortly before he passed, and I went to thank Dervla for that. He texted me the night before and was a perfect text. So, you know, the passing was quick at the end, and that was hard on the family. So we're thinking of those. But I was thinking of it yesterday, leaving the Bonsecours Hospital. And in the 1 year, Charlie Byrd, Tommy Gorman, and now David, all that I dealt with so much in the North, all who had such a huge knowledge, your colleagues on you, and, you know, we think of them all. But in 1 year, three wonderful people have passed.
And gone too soon. Bertie, thank you for that. And I'm going to finish, actually, Senan Maloney has a lovely piece about David in The Independent today. And the last line, let's say goodbye to David this way. Above all, he had no affectations and wore his considerable intellect lightly. It was a formula that won him lifelong friends wherever he went. David Davenport, RIP.